Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. The Ten Commandments. Who would have dreamt we'd be hearing so much about the Ten Commandments in the newspaper, on the nightly news, especially last year, if you remember, towards the end of the year, so much about the Ten Commandments, talking about them. Very seldom did you actually hear what they were and why Christians care about the Ten Commandments, why they matter. And when you did hear it, when you did hear reasons given for what the Ten Commandments are, essentially within the whole body of the Christian faith and why Christians care and why they matter to Christians, usually the answers were, sad to say, wrong. We're going to talk about the Ten Commandments, their right place in the Christian life, in Christian preaching. Why did God give them to us? Does he demand perfect obedience to these commandments? Or does God grade on a curve when it comes to the Ten Commandments? Are we permitted when, say, Jesus takes the Ten Commandments into hand in the Sermon on the Mount? And does his own interpretation, and it is, after all, Jesus' interpretation that is authoritative here, when he does his own interpretation, he says things like, you've heard it said, and he talks about, if your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. Is he speaking figuratively there? We're going to talk about that here during this hour of Issues Etc. We are coming to you live this Sunday night. It's the 18th of July. If you have a question or a comment for our guest in this hour, Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn on the Ten Commandments, give us a call, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727, or visit our website and our Issues Etc. forum. It's there at the website, issuesetc.org, under the What's New section of the website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Mike Horton is a regular guest here on Issues Etc. He joins us to talk about the Ten Commandments. He's professor of apologetics and theology at Westminster Seminary in Escondido, California, co-host of the radio program called The White Horse Inn, and author of several books, including his latest titled The Law of Perfect Freedom. Mike, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's always a pleasure.
Jumping right into the subject here, Mike, I've heard you say many times that American evangelicalism has replaced the Ten Commandments with a set of evangelical house rules. What do you mean by that?
Well, a lot of us were raised in churches that perhaps Missouri Synod Lutherans, at least, would find sort of odd. I was raised in evangelical dispensationalist churches, and we often were told that the Ten Commandments were not for us today, and even the Sermon on the Mount was not for us today, that we were living under grace, not law, and We weren't always aware of that, though, because especially as we got into our teenage years and began to realize how many taboos there were, it certainly was interesting, to say the least. I've gone back since. I've become Reformed and sort of encountered Christian liberty to go back and look at those house rules. And, for instance, Lewis Berry Chafer, the founder of Dallas Seminary, says, well, these rules are not really laws of like being under the law, like the Ten Commandments. Rather, they are precepts of grace. And so what they did was basically say, for all intents and purposes, that it is as important that you not drink, dance, smoke, or chew, or go with girls who do, as obey the Ten Commandments. But at least in the case of our house rules, you really mustn't do it because it's a sin against grace, not a sin against that legalistic Old Testament law. Very odd kind of thing to grow up in, where you disparage the law that God actually drafted, and you're fearful of breaking the taboos that have been established by American revivalistic culture.
Mike, I've been listening a lot lately to at least popular evangelical preaching as it comes through the mass media, the big name preachers. We've been doing some assessment of it on our weekday program. And again it comes back to me that when it comes to popular evangelical preaching of the law, they tend to, and the way I put it is, they tend to gum the audience to death with the law. your assessment of evangelical preaching of the law?
Yeah, Jeff Schwartz, your producer, told me that earlier this evening, and I just thought that was Lutherans have the best come up with the best metaphors for this stuff. It's so true. A friend of mine calls it gospel. It's neither law nor gospel. It's a confusion. It really is true, and that's why a lot of people think. For whatever it's worth, I think happened, Todd. I think you had a generation of people in evangelical fundamentalism who grew up under hellfire and brimstone. If you step on a crack, you break your mother's back, you're going to go to hell if you're divorced, and so on and so forth. That generation rebelled, either stopped going to church, or would be wooed back into church if things were toned down considerably. It's not like Bill Hybels just discovered the gospel last Thursday. It's that he realized that you can't preach that harshly to a nation full of people who basically don't care about marriage anymore. You got to be nicer. Well, that's not how Lutherans and Calvinists, at least historically, have thought. We don't think in terms of the 51% vote and what is America like today. The law comes and knocks us off our saddles no matter whether we think that we're pulling it off or not. It doesn't come there to say, I know you're basically a good person, even though you obviously violate all of the Ten Commandments in all kinds of ways every day. Forget that. You're basically a good person. You're here because you want to be better, and we are suppliers for that felt need. And that's just that's the way I think a lot of people approach the law and the gospel today. And consequently, they never really see their problem as God addresses that problem, and then they never see the greatness and depth and wonder of the solution he's provided in Christ. Because in Christ becomes a coach. He becomes a moral example. He becomes your great promise keeper leader up front, directing you to pull it off. It's not as hard as it used to be. This is not your father's Oldsmobile. It's a lot easier than it was when people were, berated for being divorced. We're not going to do that to you here. Instead, we're just going to give you 18 really easy principles that you can put into your life to make your marriage healthy so you won't get divorced.
Is this toned down? This toned down version of the law, which is not the law. It's what God has given. It's a kind of man's redacting of the law for the modern audience. Is this a symptom of the feminization of the church? You've got about 2 minutes here.
Oh gosh, 2 minutes on that. Yeah, absolutely, it is. There's no question about it. Even when you look at the Promise Keepers movement, I know this program's not about the Promise Keepers. They've done some great things, and I don't want to just bash the Promise Keepers movement. But whenever we have tried to pull this thing off without the God of the Scriptures, we have turned to sentimentalism. That's what we do in America. And God is Eternal Father, strong to save. And if we're not willing to deal with all of the rough edges that involves, then we're going to end up with a soft mother who cannot save instead of an eternal father who can save.
And do you find it ironic that evangelicals decry the removal of the Ten Commandments from courthouses and schoolhouses, but I got to wonder, Mike, how many of their pastors are using the Ten Commandments as God intended them to be used, accusing their people of breaking them, showing them their sin with these Ten Commandments so that they can, in the good news of the gospel, show them their Savior.
Yeah, a few years ago with the White Horse Inn, we did a survey on the floor of a major convention of right-wing Christian evangelicals. And, these are all people who want the Ten Commandments posted in all of the courtrooms across America. And we just asked, can you name the Ten Commandments? And R.C. Sproul said that he pulled over the side of his road listening to that in the car crying. He said it was so devastating to him personally to hear those responses. These were, okay, it was a Christian booksellers convention. These are people who write books, sell books, whatever. They're supposed to know a little more than the average person on the street or in the pew. And it was tragic. They didn't know what the Ten Commandments were, but the first question was, you know, do you think they should be posted in the courtroom? Oh, yes, we've got to get America back for God and so forth. That's the tragedy. We don't know the Ten Commandments. We don't know God's requirements. We don't know what we're up against when we talk about a holy God. And if you don't know that, there's no way the gospel is going to make sense.
Dr. Mike Horton is our guest. We'll take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to turn to Jesus' summary of the Ten Commandments. He says it's quite simple. The whole law is summarized. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul and your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, does Jesus really mean all your heart, soul, and mind? Does he really mean that my neighbor is everyone, including my enemy? We'll talk about that when we come back with Dr. Mike Horton as we talk about the Ten Commandments. It is sad. There's somebody who would say, look, we need them posted everywhere, schoolhouses, courthouses, can't tell you what those commandments are, cannot name them, and they're Christians. And folks, it's not just Christian booksellers. I'd probably get the same response from our church just had a big convention here in St. Louis, probably the same responses from the people gathered there, too. We'll be right back.
Christ-centered, cross-focused. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is looking for one member from each Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation to become our official lay representative. Responsibilities simply involve promotion of Issues Etc. in your local church. Now, if you're interested, leave your name, phone number, and mailing address, and your congregation's name, city and state, on our automated resource line, 1-800-737-0172, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Mike Horton is our guest. We're talking about the Ten Commandments. Mike has written a new book called The Law of Perfect Freedom. By the way, let me tell you about another great book. It's our Issues Etc. book of the month for July. It's called Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview, and it's written by our Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Gene Edward Veith. Thought control, no objective truth, no transcendence above the state or the highest authority. These were the hallmarks of fascism in the 20th century. But these hallmarks, even though we don't call it fascism so much when we see it, are still with us today in our postmodern culture and elsewhere. You can read about it in our Issues Etc. book of the month for July called Modern Fascism. Now, you can browse before you buy the book at our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section of the website, and you'll find Modern Fascism and some information on the book. You can also order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. Now, Modern Fascism is $17.99 plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040. Modern Fascism by Dr. Gene Edward Veith. It's our Issues Etc. book of the month for July. Mike, before we go on, unless we have Lutheran and Calvinist listeners who are pounding their chests with pride, saying, look, what you've been talking about so far, this toned-down preaching of the law, is only found in those fluffy non-denominational churches. I know a lot of churches in my church body have bought into this. Is this true? Is it only non-denominational church bodies that preach the law this way?
Well, for the Lutherans, all I can go on is what I hear from my friends, and they complain about the same things I complain about in our circles. Yeah, it's a sort of kinder, gentler Moses That's, I think, how a lot of people see Jesus. You know, you got Moses who got up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning, or let's just say the God of the Old Testament. And then Jesus comes along, and he's wow, what a refreshing guy after all of that.
But does Jesus come along and say, you know, Moses said, and then kind of soften it up a little? Does he say, you shall not kill, but come on, come on.
Gosh, Todd, I mean,
God's willing to deal with us now on this point.
He makes Shuler look like an like Moses. He really, when Jesus comes, he ratchets it up several notches. He says, you have heard it said, but I say, the religious leaders are taken aback because, and this is something people don't realize. The religious leaders were saying, wait, we're not, okay, we're the guardians of the law here. We're the ones complaining that your disciples pluck grain on the Sabbath. We're the ones who are worried that you're not holding up the law enough. And you turn around and you say, you have heard it said, but I say, what about divorce? Well, Moses allowed it because of the hardness of your hearts. But I say, whoever divorces except for desertion or adultery has committed adultery. Good grief. The rabbis were standing around scratching their heads saying, I thought we were the strict ones around here. Jesus showed the real purpose of the law was never a bunch of rules. The real purpose of the law was loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, and you guys are so thick, you don't get it unless I give you the laws that explain what real love is all about. And here we live in America in the 21st century, and it's if anything worse, because people pit love against law, and they think it's not about all these rules, it's about loving, if we'll just love each other. Well, that's what the law is about. Jesus summarized the law as loving God and your neighbor.
Now, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind. Does he mean all? Or when he talks about my neighbor, does that category neighbor, love my neighbor as myself, include even my enemy, the neighbor down the street, who may literally, geographically be my neighbor, but I want nothing to do with the guy?
Look at the parables. You know, I've heard these sermons, as it sounds like you have too. I've heard these sermons where people say, well, he's not really saying X, Y, or Z. What does he really say in the parables? What does he really say when in other portions of the Gospels Jesus explains what he means by love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength? He means the Good Samaritan, whom Jews hated because he was a half-breed. He shouldn't have been held up as a great example of anything except for being a half-breed. He's the one who actually loves his neighbor. The rich young ruler goes away unhappy because he's willing to do the one thing he hasn't done, assuming he's done the 99 other things. And what's the one? Go sell everything you have and give it to the poor. Jesus wasn't kidding. He was saying, you don't understand. If you really have fulfilled the law, if you've really loved your neighbor, you're not going to live by lording it over. You know, how can you live in your mansion when you walk by these homeless people every day?
There's another place in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus kind of gets on a roll, and very well-known words. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better to enter life eyeless, handless, footless, than to go to hellfire with your eyes, your hands, and your feet intact. Mm-hmm. Does Jesus really mean this?
Yes, he really does. And this is why there is absolutely no hope for us in the law. And Jesus isn't doing this as a stunt. He's not saying, this is important for people to hear too, he's not saying, I'm going to preach the law as such a difficult, impossible thing, though it's not really intrinsically, so that people will say, oh boy, do I need you. He is really showing people what God created human beings to be in the first place. And the good news here is that Jesus Christ himself fulfills that. Everything Jesus is saying, we are expected to be, and is judging us for not being. Just by holding it up to us, he himself perfectly fulfilled in his 33 years of what we call active obedience. He lived the law in heart, soul, mind, and strength, loving God with everything he's got and his neighbor as himself. He did that for 33 years without swerving, without giving in to temptation. And it wasn't just a bunch of law-keeping as a sort of external legalistic thing. It was really out of zeal for the zeal for your house consumes me. And that kind of zeal that you and I know only in faint moments, in an infinitesimal degree compared to him, that whole life that he lived was that kind of life, and he lived it in our place.
Dr. Mike Horton is our guest. We're talking about the Ten Commandments. He is co-host of the radio program, The White Horse Inn. You can check out the website for The White Horse Inn by going first to our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the section that's titled Links with Regular Guests. Click on that, scroll down, and you'll find a link to Mike Horton and The White Horse Inn. Or if you'd like to know how to receive their publication, it's called Modern Reformation Magazine. Call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, and we'll give you the phone number and the mailing address for Modern Reformation Magazine and The White Horse Inn. That resource line number again, 1-800-737-0172. Mike, before the last break, talked about how the law comes along and knocks us out of our saddles. Well, if we understand it the way Jesus has interpreted it, and the way God originally gave it to his people to be understood, that's all Jesus is bringing us when he interprets the law for us in the Gospels. It not only knocks us out of our saddles, it shoots the horse, and then it kills us, too. It's intended to kill the sinner so that the good news of Christ's perfect obedience, we're going to talk about that active and passive obedience of Christ, his obedience to the law when we come back, so that his perfect obedience might count for us and make us alive. We'll be right back. The fascists of the 20th century have been dead for 60 years, but are their ideas, is their worldview still alive and well in the 21st century? How have the fascists' disregard for life, for truth, and for Orthodox Christianity survived into the postmodern era? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is called Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Jean Edward Veith. You can have Modern Fascism by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. Or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Modern Fascism. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again. I'm talking with the author of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Modern Fascism, Dr. Jean Edward Veith. Ed, where do you see fascism today?
Well, what we're dealing with right now in the war on terrorism is a war against fascism. Saddam Hussein and his Ba'ath Party that ruled Iraq and that still rules Syria and still has a very big following in the Arab world literally is a fascist party that developed out of the 40s. It's Arab fascism. And Saddam Hussein is exactly in his ideology as well as his practices in that tradition of Hitler, Mussolini, and others. But the Islamic fascism, you'll see this described, commentators, some of them are using the term Islamofascism, which is a very precise and accurate description of their philosophy. It's an Islamic fascism that seeks to create this perfect Islamic state in this world, and that acknowledges no transcendent moral law to restrict what they're willing to do to people.
So it sounds like you're saying fascism isn't dead.
It's still with us, and it's with us in not only those overt literal fascism that the terrorists and Saddam Hussein exemplify, but the postmodernist thought that's so common today, the idea that truth is relative, that the truth is a construction of the will, that morality is nothing more than an imposition of power, and all these things that we've dealt with, that can be traced in a direct, literal line back through the fascist philosophers of the 30s and the 20s, and in the origins in the thought of Friedrich Nietzsche, who is an important thinker for both the fascist movement and is very much in vogue in universities today.
Find out more about our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview by Dr. Gene Edward Veith by going online to our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on modern fascism. You can also order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Modern Fascism. 1-800-325-3040. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss answering the objections of unbelievers. Ken Samples of the Augustine Fellowship Study Center will be our guest. How can anyone know that God exists? How can God be three in one? That whole imponderable Trinity thing. Are the Gospels reliable accounts of Jesus' life? And don't all religions lead to the same God? We'll talk about all of that next week, the objections of unbelievers with Ken Samples on Issues Etc. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing throughout the summer on the program, check out our website, issuesetc.org. While you're at the website, make sure you read the Ten Commandments and their meanings that we've posted there, issuesetc.org. It's Sunday evening, July the 18th. Issues Etc. is a live call-in program. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. We're taking your questions and comments on the Ten Commandments with Mike Horton, 1-800-730-2727. Mike is professor of apologetics and theology at Westminster Seminary in Escondido, California. He's co-host of the radio program The White Horse Inn and author of several books, including his latest called The Law of Perfect Freedom. Mike, let's talk about the active and passive, so-called active and passive obedience of Christ. Before the break, you made a great case there for Christ's entire life being one of, as you put it, zealous in a sense that we can only imagine, we can't really imagine, a perfect zeal for the will of his Father and his commands. Why do theologians distinguish between his active obedience and what they call his passive obedience to God?
Yeah, what they're trying to say with that distinction is great. I don't like the terms active and passive obedience because nothing Jesus did for one second in his life was ever passive. But the point is that active, meaning what he did before he went to the cross, passive in his surrendering of himself, that's why it's sort of passive, the passion, passio, giving himself over to the cross, that in both his life and his death, Jesus was obeying the Father. And it's so important because I think in a lot of evangelical evangelism, it really everything gets reduced to the cross and forgiveness, whereas for us as Reformation Christians, it's as Calvin says, from the moment he was born, he began to merit our salvation for us.
This has been a great comfort to me personally, Mike, because in the everyday, on the ground, grassroots level Christian life, when I find myself recognizing myself in my thought, my word, my deed, and very often they're all three going at the same time, disobedience to God's clear law. And I know that God demands perfect obedience in that law. He didn't grade on a curve. Otherwise,
right.
Christ wouldn't have had to be perfectly obedient in my place. The great comfort of knowing that Christ's obedience has been declared to me, it has been counted to me, and that I have to my account with God Christ's perfect obedience.
Yeah, J. Gresham Machen, the founder of Westminster Seminary, said when he was dying in the 1920s in a hospital out in the hinterlands in North Dakota, telegraphed back to John Murray, one of his professors, and said, so thankful for the act of obedience, period, no hope without it, period, and then he died. And, a lot of Christians will say, well, that's very strange. Even when I did hear about justification growing up, which was, I have to say, very rarely, when I did hear about it, it was defined as just as if I'd never sinned. But, of course, that's forgiveness. And forgiveness is, you know, not a bad thing. Forgiveness is wonderful news. But we go to hell forgiven. That's an important thing for people to hear. Forgiveness doesn't save anybody. And that's why God says over and over again in the Psalms, in the prophets, I want obedience, not sacrifice. It's not enough that I forgive. Forgiveness just reminds me that you're a sinner. I don't want to be reminded for all of eternity that you're a forgiven sinner. I want to know for all of eternity that you have fulfilled the obedience for which I created you, that you're the person I made you to be. And, of course, we can't fulfill that obedience in ourselves. And the good news is, for all of eternity, we're not just going to be forgiven sinners. We are going to be justified sinners. We are going to be people who, for all of eternity, are viewed not only as those who have never committed a sin in thought, word, and deed, but as those who have perfectly loved God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength, and their neighbor as themselves, because Christ's perfect law-keeping is representative for them. That is the good news of the gospel, not just forgiveness, but the active obedience of Christ imputed, credited to us.
Dr. Mike Horton is our guest. Feel free to give us a call with a question or a comment as we talk about the Ten Commandments and the law of God. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. First up, listening in Springfield, Missouri, on KSCV, Philip is on the line. Philip, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello, I enjoy your program very much.
Thank you.
I was curious about the enumeration of the commandments. Some Protestant churches enumerate them differently than others. Could you briefly explain why that is?
Thank you very much, Philip. And it's a good basic question here, Mike. Let's see if we can clear that one up.
Yeah, and Todd, correct me if I'm wrong here. I think the way we did this was has no real theological division between the Lutheran and the Reformed. It's because the Lutherans followed the ordering of the traditional ordering of the Roman Church. Didn't change that, and the Reformed went back to the Jewish ordering of the commandments, which separated the first, what for us are the first and second commandments. The first commandment being, you shall have no other gods before you. The second commandment, you shall not make for yourself any image of God, any likeness of God from anything in heaven or on earth, anything under the earth or on the earth. And the Lutheran numbering merged the first and second commandment together. Help me, Todd. Am I getting that
well,
right?
Well, what the Lutherans did, what the Calvinists did, was they retained, or they went back to one form of the Jewish numbering, because there are actually two different Jewish numberings. One would make, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, the first commandment. So there are three numberings. But the Lutherans kept what is called the ancient historic numbering that was held by the Roman Catholic Church. We just didn't see fit to fiddle with the numbering. Does it make any difference how we number these commandments, Mike?
Well, I think the polemical reason for numbering things the way they did, I guess it became important for the Reformed in order to say that we cannot make, not only we cannot bow down to and worship, which the Lutherans agreed with, we cannot actually make any representation of anything in heaven or anything even on the earth or under the earth that represents God. In fact, the old Reformed at least believed that you couldn't have a representation of Christ because the incarnate Jesus was God. You can't say you were just representing the humanity of Christ. The human person was God. So there was a polemical reason, especially why the Reformed wanted to accentuate the second commandment as a distinct commandment. But I think that with the numbering, whether it's the numbering that Lutherans follow or the Reformed follow, the substance is what we're talking about, and we can discuss the substance, I think, with a lot of unanimity.
Folks, the best callers, as we talk with Mike Horton about the Ten Commandments, will receive a copy of Mike's next book called The Law of Perfect Freedom, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. That book is Mike's new book. It's just out, called The Law of Perfect Freedom. Let's talk with Bill, who listens in St. Louis on KSIV. Bill, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Very well.
Great. There's kind of a misinterpretation that I've heard from younger folks that are just getting into the Bible that when Jesus came and he summed up the Ten Commandments with love your God, basically they think that Jesus was the first one to ever say this. But it's actually in Deuteronomy 6:5.
The summary of the commandments.
Right.
Yes.
It's actually been there all along.
Thank you very much. I think that was the point I was trying to make before, too, that when Jesus summarizes commandments, he's not presenting anything new, but in fact, the way that God would always have had his people read these commandments, Mike.
Yeah, in fact, it is interesting that people will say what Jesus really introduces as a new thing is that we love instead of following all these laws that we love, and that's the big difference between Jesus and Moses. Well, as the caller rightly points out, and you do, Jesus actually was quoting from a rabbinical tradition. Jesus did not invent that line. Jesus' summary of the law, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, is not original with him. And that is really important. It's interesting. Jewish friends have pointed that out to me, and I thought, isn't that interesting? That's where we want to find Jesus, really, his uniqueness. Jesus, wow, on the law. That's not Jesus' uniqueness. Jesus' uniqueness on the law, if anything, is driving the point home more than any Pharisee ever had.
And then keeping it.
And then keeping it personally on our behalf before his Father.
Folks, our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. I know we've covered a lot of information here so far with Mike that might be new to you. And if you're thinking to yourself, look, I've really learned a lot just in this short time about the Ten Commandments, but I wish I could listen to it again at my own pace. All you have to do is call the local church that sponsors Issues, Etc. for you, and they'll send you a free cassette recording of this hour with Mike on the Ten Commandments. Get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because you should hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address for that sponsor right after the Issues, Etc. close theme. Now, when we come back, we'll take more of your questions and your comments. If you're getting a busy signal, please keep trying. We'll be freeing up some phone lines here as we conclude our conversation with Dr. Mike Horton on the Ten Commandments. Mike is professor of apologetics and theology at Westminster Seminary in Escondido, California, co-host of the radio program The White Horse Inn, and author of several books. And the best callers to this program will receive this book, The Law of Perfect Freedom, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. When we come back, and as we conclude our conversation after speaking with you a little bit, our listeners, what about the person who says, look, I've read the Ten Commandments, pretty thoroughly versed on them. I actually know what they are, and I think I've done pretty well. Maybe I fall here, maybe I slip up on this one occasionally, but by and large, I think I'm keeping them pretty well. And what do you say to the person who says, no, I've read them, and I realize, as God would have me realize, I've broken one and all? We'll be right back.
Christ-centered, cross-focused. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. If you would like to know how to contact our guest in this hour, Dr. Mike Horton and the White Horse Inn, or if you'd like to become one of our Issues Etc. lay representatives in your local Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation, or if you'd like to help support the Christ-centered, cross-focused outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our Reformation Club, that's our monthly donor program, call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172, or feel free to write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. The address again, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Listening in Kansas City on KCCV, Mildred is on the phone. Mildred, welcome to Issues Etc. Hi, Mildred.
Hello.
What's your question or comment, Mildred?
Well, I heard that the other speaker, I guess, say that you could go to hell and your sins is already forgiven, but you'd go to hell. I'd just like to make further explanation on that.
Thank you very much. It's a good question. Let's clarify that if we could. Mike, what exactly did you mean by that? You were talking about the act of obedience of Christ, which counts in our place.
No, that's great, and I'm glad the caller mentioned that. My point was that if we are forgiven, that means that all that we have done that has displeased God is wiped away. The slate is clean. But the problem is what God actually requires of us is what He created us to be. And that is holy and perfect and upright. He created us in rectitude, in righteousness, in holiness. And it's not just that we have to be forgiven. We have to actually have performed the justice, the obedience that He requires in His law. And the good news of the gospel is not just that He has provided forgiveness, but that He has provided justification. So it was sort of a provocative way of saying it. Another provocative way of saying it is to say that we cannot be saved by forgiveness alone. We are saved by works. The question is, whose works? Are we saved by Christ's works or ours? And the point of justification is to say that we are saved by works, but we're saved by Christ's works in our place.
I think I would put it this way, just to add a little bit here, Mike, for her question there, for Mildred's question. Christ atoned for the sins of the world, and those who will languish eternally in hell apart from Christ, apart from faith in Christ. Christ's blood was shed for them. Well, what do they lack? They lack what God's gift of faith brings to the sinner. That is the whole message of the gospel. Slate wiped clean, and guess what? Everything that is Christ is now yours. His obedience is now yours. And so I like the way you put it there. We are saved by works. It's not the question of whether or not works saved or whether someone earned our salvation. It's whose work, who earned it. The answer to both questions is Jesus.
That's why we've got to hear about Him all the time.
Mike, your book is a catechism of sorts for the modern day on the Ten Commandments, this new book called The Law of Perfect Freedom. What is a catechism, please? And make the case for how a catechism can help inform people about not only the Ten Commandments, but all of God's Word.
Well, thank you, first of all, for that representation. It's not as good as a catechism. It's not as good as Luther's small catechism or the Heidelberg catechism on the Reformed side or the Westminster shorter catechism. It is simply an attempt. Actually, I think it's pre-catechetical. It's something to give people before you even give them a catechism, although I always think it's better to start with a catechism because that's why it was written. Because it asks the question, what are the Ten Commandments? Why are they relevant for us today? And I think that if people pick this book up and read it, they will be able to say, you know what, the lawbreakers, the people who break the Ten Commandments, the people who don't respect the Ten Commandments are not the gay lobby in Washington, D.C. They're me. They're my family. They're my church. They are my community. They're the people I live with and work with. I'm a sinful person, and I dwell amongst a sinful people, as Isaiah said. That, I hope, is what people come away with. And then the good news is that there is good news for lawbreakers, but there is only good news for those who realize they're lawbreakers.
To the person who's listened so far to our conversation, or maybe they just joined us at the very end and heard you say that, and they said, look, I know those Ten Commandments. I got them posted in my office, in my house, everywhere. And I know them, and I think I know what they mean. And if I look at my life in light of them, I think I'm doing pretty good. Occasionally, I slip up on the coveting or maybe a little bit on the, maybe I want something that isn't mine. But by and large, I'm keeping those things. What do you say to them?
Well, I think that a good conservative Republican could easily be the rich young ruler. These things I've kept for my youth. Give me something new, Jesus. All right, go sell everything you have and give it to the poor. What have you done with the homeless people you've walked by? What have you done with all of those folks you routinely, in sort of an abstract way, care about? But really think, well, if they just get off their haunches, and Jesus comes to you and he says, you don't care about your neighbor. Well, who's my neighbor? I mean, I care about my neighbor. No, who's my neighbor? Well, this Samaritan over here, this person who lives on the other side of town is my neighbor. Jesus redefines everything, and then he makes us feel really sorry, but he makes us feel crappy. Because that's what we are. We're bad people. We don't just do bad things. We really are bad people.
And then to the person who has listened, and here we only have about a minute to answer, and they say, I've listened, and I've seen those Ten Commandments, and I have broken them. And I can't see a way clear that I have even approached keeping one of them, much less all ten. Your response?
Yeah, you're not far from the kingdom. You know, this is gone into the prisons, and people are closer there to the kingdom than people who've sat in church year after year after year for 50, 60 years.
What's the word of comfort there, Mike?
The word of comfort is, I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. And look at the people who are around Jesus. Look at the criticisms that he got. You're a friend of tax gatherers and sinners, and Jesus said, behold, wisdom is vindicated by what she accomplishes. And Jesus accomplished a great deal, and he accomplished all of that for you, for anyone who is listening and saying, he can't possibly mean me. He does mean you.
Folks, we'll be continuing to take your phone calls on the Ten Commandments in the next hour. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. The best callers will receive Mike Horton's new book, The Law of Perfect Freedom, 1-800-730-2727. Now, our guest in the next hour will be Dr. Carl Fikencher of Concordia Theological Seminary. The topic will continue. The guest will change. You can also post a question or a comment on this subject at our forum, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section of the website. Now, you won't be able to hear this next hour on the radio. It's only on the Internet. To listen, just go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the worldwide KFUO logo. We are coming to you live this Sunday evening. It's July the 18th. Write this number down. Give us a call during the break. If you're getting a busy signal, which you will be, just keep trying. We're going to be freeing up phone lines immediately on the other side of the break. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. And the best callers will receive The Law of Perfect Freedom by Dr. Mike Horton. Mike, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues, Etc.
Todd, as usual, it's a great pleasure.
Dr. Mike Horton is professor of apologetics and theology at Westminster Seminary in Escondido, California. He co-hosts the radio program The White Horse Inn, and he's author of several books, including his latest, The Law of Perfect Freedom. There's a great little quote from Luther that I have kept in my computer at home, looking for a reason to use it. Unfortunately, I don't have the whole thing with me this evening, but I remember the essence. Luther says, look, God has no time for imitation sinners, for fake sinners, for part-time sinners. He has no time for people who only sin as a hobby. He sent his son Jesus Christ in the world for full-time professional, full-time professional sinners. Real sinners, not imitation sinners. Luther says, look at those Ten Commandments and recognize yourself to be the real sinner that Jesus shed his blood for. The real sinner that he came to associate himself with, to be numbered among transgressors like you and like me. These are the people for whom Jesus died. These are the people for whom Jesus shed his blood. And though, whether we know it or not, it's everyone, all of us, from top to bottom. He shed his blood there at the cross as the culminating act of obedience to a God that he had pledged his obedience from his very incarnation. Obedience unto death on a cross. That death was died for you and for me. Thanks be to God. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.